Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So Faster,
welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for April 1st, 2025. We're going no April Fool's jokes this week, Case.
I don't believe in that. I loathe it. I'm somebody who works in morning radio.
Yeah,
and,
God.
And luckily I work with people who are all like, yeah, no, it's we're not doing that. Like, and I always make the point now, especially I use the phrase all the time that we live in a post-truth society. Very few things humans can come to a mutual agreement on. So April Fools, there's like a level of challenge there that used to not exist. But when you live in a post-truth society, April Fool's Day, which has always sucked, is now just incredibly hard.
Yeah, no. And at least for me, because my birthday being right in the middle of summer and my half birthday being a holiday in of itself, it always ended up that April Fool's was kind of the day that at least then the 1990s have to make sure everyone gets a sticker. That was like my designated birthday sticker day was April Fool's.
Okay.
So yeah. Should I do the real intro now, I guess?
Well, yeah, we're a member of the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Open the Voice Gate, weekly Dragon Gate content. Hit the red circle donation button if you so please. If you like what we do, if you like the weekly Dragon Gate content or Michinoku Pro Those Days, a retrospective series, new episodes to return in 2 weeks. You know, don't be afraid to, financially compensate us in some way. Again, no pressure. And what else did I miss, Mike?
Oh, thanks to everyone who has in the past.
Thanks to everybody who has in the past. Boy, do I love that quarterly check. Greatly appreciated. Love it. And Mike, I'm absolutely delighted to be here once again. Big week.
Yeah, no, it's a huge week because, Case, for the first time in 2 years, I have Texas Rangers baseball on my TV without going to like East Streams or Stream East or like whatever Reddit thing is. I'm actually watching Texas Rangers baseball on my local television.
That is very good to hear. Obviously, this is first a Dragon Gate podcast, second a regional sports network podcast. I am also watching the Texas Rangers play Joe Lanza Cincinnati Reds right now, but I am curious as to how you are doing that.
So funny enough, when Diamond Sports, which is really our big bugbear about the regional sports thing, like when we really talk about it, it's about Bally's and Diamond Sports. They decided last year to do away with their Dallas Stars NHL contract. So the Stars launched their own D2C over-the-air app called Victory Plus. And it's great. It's a good app. And, like, the ads aren't too bad. They just sell local ads during the breaks, and they make sure you're within what would be your viewing area. The Rangers hopped on that this year. And I have to tell you, like, it is interesting seeing, like, from generations of just like these RSN affiliates, your Fox Sports or your Sunshine Network or Marquee for you, but like after decades of seeing that and now seeing like a production being brought in house, and it just kind of in a way it feels like I am in a post-truth society because they're just going to feed me the Ranger stories I want to hear. But also I've never seen a broadcast be so excited about getting a fly camera. Like, that's all they talked about over the first series case was, hey, look at this great eye in the sky camera that now we have as a part of this network. I'm like, did the Dallas Stars pay for this? Like, is that how this is happening? But it's surprising, like, now seeing this and like seeing just basically like this absolute disintegration. I think it's just going to continue and continue. Like, but it's okay on the other side if you're one of those teams fans who are still tied into one of those bad deals. Case, I can tell you as I like look at the HUD display is clean. It's great. Like they tell you everything you need to know and nothing else. It's a premium viewing experience, the Victory Plus.
Is this a free service that they're offering?
So this is where they got me, Case. They do have it on the digital stations, and I could just within my every TV has an internal antenna, a digital antenna. I could pull it up from that way. I like the app, and they have like a special deal that you basically pay $100 in spring training, and you also get 2 free tickets, and you get access the entire year to everything.
Okay.
So for me, I look at that, I'm like, okay, that's 2 tickets I probably would go to a game anyways. So what the and it will end up being like $50 to $60. So really, I'm paying $40 for this.
Wow. Service. Okay.
And I'll tell you this, I'm already getting my dollars per game happening at all times, especially with these nice Cincinnati 5:40 Central Time starts.
Oh, well, it's great. The White Sox moved all their home games this year to a 6:40 first pitch. So, and that's Central Time. So no longer 7:10, but they moved it to 6:40, which is awesome. That really
getting the game done before 9 o'clock.
Well, as somebody who goes to bed at about 9:15 every night,
right.
Boy, is that just a fantastic turn of events. I'm going to watch more baseball than ever this year because my dad, who is a Detroit Tigers fan, obviously in the late 2010s went through an era of just being very depressed by the fact that team in the early 2010s won 0 World Series and then had a very, very slow.
Sorry about that, by the way.
Yes. Yeah, it is 100% your fault. But, you know, just the deconstruction of that franchise and the money they were spending to lose a bunch of games is very depressing. But he's back in. So he bought an MLB TV account this year and gave me the password. So I've been enjoying 28 baseball teams with MLB TV. The problem, of course, is that the White Sox and the Cubs are blacked out in my local area. And as I was talking about in the Voices of Wrestling Slack a few days ago, the White Sox and the Bulls and the Blackhawks all launched a venture called the Chicago Sports Network this past year, which is not on YouTube TV. I don't believe it's on Xfinity, which is the primary cable provider in this area.
There's no D2C with this?
D2C
direct-to-consumer.
Well, okay, so they've got an app, so this is the thing, right? So it's on DirecTV. I don't think it's on Xfinity, and very few people in this area have DirecTV. It's an over-the-air antenna channel. I have bought 2 separate antennas and cannot pick up this channel to save my life, and so I am paying $20 a month. Oof. To watch the Chicago White Sox play baseball. It would be $30 a month if I wanted to get the package that includes the Bulls, Blackhawks, and White Sox. Spoiler, their season's both ending here in a few weeks, so what a ripoff that would be. But I am paying $20 a month, the Fan Leyenda White Sox tier, as I described it, to watch a team that has actually been pretty fun thus far, but a very bad baseball team nonetheless. So thank you, Jerry Reinsdorf, for once again treating the third biggest market in the country like it is a fucking flea market and making an embarrassment out of all of our sports teams here, minus the Cubs, who do that on their own.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like, I know the Cubs and Marquee are their own kind of Ouroboros there, but...
and they're their own thing. And I mean, really, yeah. they're no different than the Chicago Sports Network. I think it's a tad cheaper, and their fan base is, I think, slightly happier, even though Cubs fans, I mean, the thing with Cubs fans is now
with the Ricketts family, you have enough things to have a bad opinion about the team. Yeah.
Boy, you should talk to some of these Cubs fans that are diehard Cubs fans and the leaps they make to defend the Ricketts family at times. They're a fascinating thought exercise when you get the right person to do it. But, you know, we're now 9 years removed from the Cubs World Series. And with 2 disappointing seasons in a row, it's finally starting to be a fan base that is discontent with the things that are happening. But they lived in that post World Series glow for so long that it feels like it's only now, like this season. This season, there's more pressure on the team than there had been even the past 2 years, even last year with Council and his big contract coming in as the manager. It feels like the Cubs actually have to do something this year. Or there's going to be a real problem. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like that, the Bill Simmons 5 year window thing. Mm-hmm. I think when you have a team, and I guess I'd be a part of that too, as a Rangers fan getting the first World Series. I think the 5 year window extends out further. Like I feel like the Red Sox are still kind of, but they keep on going back to the World Series, but I still feel like they're kind of still in that 2004 afterglow 20 years later.
Well, and I say this as somebody who knows a lot of Red Sox fans that, they were living in it until they traded Mookie Betts. And
that's fair. I mean, witness the destruction of a franchise. I've seen that lately.
Yes. Yeah. You know a thing or two about that. I mean, that's the MLB equivalent. And it's not that it took away the memories of 2004, but it made all the people that, you know, between 04, 07, 13, 18, a lot of that goodwill was washed away in one trade when Mookie Betts got sent to LA. And I don't think fan base has been the same ever since.
Yeah, no, that's entirely fair. Like, I wonder at what point am I going to, like, have more than my usual concerns about the Rangers ownership. But because, I mean, up until 2010, the Rangers were the least successful team in baseball history. Like, they were the only ones never to get to the CS ever. Wow. So it's all very new within like the last 15 years, I would say. But so I feel like the 5 years is not going to go just to 2028. I feel like I might still see, at least within the area, a level of goodwill, at least for, like, because Rangers fans in DFW are kind of different from just like the everyone else who just has Cowboys kind of up top. Like, it's interesting how it works. Like, the baseball fans are kind of in like their own like old school silo, and then like The Dallas Stars fans are like the ones that are like the aggrieved, like, why don't you talk about us? I have to imagine that you see that whenever like the Chicago Fire or Red Stars do well, kind of, but they
don't do well, so I don't have to worry about that. I didn't live here when the Blackhawks were on their tear in the 2010s, but the impression that I always got was that the city during that point in time would treat the Blackhawks fairly and with as much coverage as you can give a hockey team. And we've got Bedard now, who's had a disappointing second season. But if Bedard does something, the city talks about it. The thing that's always crazy here that I don't know if people realize and they live outside Chicago is the Bulls lead the NBA in attendance every year.
Right, how huge that arena is.
It's not only huge, but it's a tourist attraction. Like, I always make the point when I go to Bulls games, it's so many Asian people and Eastern European people that are just they're there for the Michael Jordan statue, and then obviously they move a ton of merchandise because of the Mitchell and Ness partnership, and, you know, the Pippen jerseys, the Rodman jerseys, the Bulls or the Jordan jerseys. But the contemporary Bulls are so irrelevant in this city, and they have been for as long as I've lived here, outside of the season a few years ago when Lonzo was healthy and Zach LaVine was healthy and DeMar DeRozan was healthy. They made a nice little run of the Eastern Conference. But the Bulls are just, I mean, I would argue that the Blackhawks, because they've had big stars, whether it be like Patrick Kane, who was a holdover from the 2010s, or now Connor Bedard, the Blackhawks at least have more relevant celebrities in the city than the Bulls do. But you would never know, and Reinsdorf will never change because he makes so much money on that team because of everything else. But the Bulls are really the ones that suffer here. I mean, no one's watching their games, because when they pivoted to Chicago Sports Network this past year, viewership has dropped 63% year over year on Bulls games. And they just, they're always 35 and 42 or whatever that math is, and they're just there and no one cares. You know, since Derrick Rose has left, no one has cared about that team.
Yeah, and I felt like that, at least, like, I spent a time like really kind of reading about the overall like external impact of Dirk Nowitzki in Dallas, and at least up until the trade, it really felt like that the Mavericks would be in kind of a similar situation, that like people would go, especially like European fans, because it's like, oh, this is where Dirk played. And you would have like that kind of detached thing. But I mean, like, I'd feel a lot better about it being if you're like a Bulls, I guess, within the organization, knowing that, than versus being a Hornets, you know, organization.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
like you
know,
at least have something.
Our team's not going anywhere, which is nice, you know. And I say that, I mean, I'm not a Bulls fan. I don't give a fuck about this team. I'm a Pacers fan, you know, and watch 75 games a year. So I really care about the Pacers more so than the Bulls. And luckily, Pacers ownership seems to have righted the ship, and that team is safe in Indianapolis for a long time to come. But yeah, I mean, I would much rather live in a city like the Bulls, where even if they're bad and even if they're playing a bad team, it can be kind of hard to get tickets at a reasonable price to, compared to the Pelicans, compared to you know, a bad Memphis Grizzlies team, etc., a bad Pacers team. I mean, when the Pacers are bad, nobody shows up. Now they're really good this year and they're really fun and the city rallies around them, but the years where the Pacers are a below 500 team, I mean, you can walk on in and basically sit at half court.
Yeah, I always kind of find it interesting, those like two team cities, like how much like they will still kind of in a way prop it up, even if it's like a situation where like you will have like the diehards that will still always be there because like the Pacers are what you kind of have, right?
Yeah.
And it's just interesting contrasting that to like a four sports team. But Case, we somehow spent 15 minutes just talking about this, and I know that
about hyper American centric sports topics,
right.
That will alienate even casual American sports fans.
Yeah. It's like us and Pablo Torre are like the two are like the three people who care about that. But it's been a big week in Dragon Gate with the end of Raid Day Parejas. And Case, I think first we have to give you credit and you take a victory lap for somehow completely shooting the moon about the Raid Day Parejas kind of predictions we tried to do last week. We very rarely does it end up that someone calls everything exactly correct.
Well, I just felt as we got closer to it and I started breaking down that math that this would be a rare instance we're doing not only unit versus unit, but heal unit versus heal unit would make total sense. And I don't know if the block play Strong Machine J and KZ versus Hamari and Shun Skywalker match that was won via forfeit because Hamari was out due to illness, I don't know if that was them forcing Hamari to sit because maybe they screwed up their block math and this was the only way they could get there. I don't know if Hamari actually was sick. I don't know what the story is there, but as we hit the final day of tournament play on the 29th, I just kept on thinking, like, this tournament does not, you know, KZ and Strong Machine J are a safety valve in a lot of instances, but it feels like you don't need a safety valve here. It feels like there's a direction we can go, and Shun and Hamari are that direction. So I saw the red herring last week when I sat down and did that math, and Mike, what we got here on March 30th, I think, was one of the most entertaining Kobe Sambo Hall shows in quite a while, and a good reminder that when you put worthwhile stuff in this building, not only do people show up, but people show up and they make a lot of noise. And it's really, really nice when this building is a vibrant building like it was just a few days ago.
Yeah. And I feel like just, and I haven't really looked into it, it was the most people in that building since at least Gate of Mione last year, which was another example of giving them something important to put in the building. And then with Dragon Gate never really tying where they do their championship finals at, like it's never been a thing where it was guaranteed that you go to Cork and Hall for finals, being able to have this for the hometown fans with, and let's be honest, the Kobe Sambo shows, with the exception of Gata Miyane, not necessarily always the most thrilling shows every month, but having that as kind of the bait to get more people into the hometown show, it pays off at like incredibly, and it comes off right off the screen with it. It's one of the few times that the overhead lights don't feel so like despairing when you're able to see virtually like six rows deep on every side, and a crowd that really by the end of the show and with the matches that he had really kind of anointed the night to be Hamare's night. And at least in Kobe Sambo Hall on the 30th, it was very much his building.
For reference, the Gate of Miyane show in August did a full sellout of 1,100 people, and it was announced as a sellout in advance. that was a show that we talked about at the time. We talked to people that were at that show, a home run success show with the local talk show host coming and booking that card, and also having Great O'Con and Bushi on the show certainly helped. But that was 1,100 advanced sellout, huge deal there. For reference, because they did not run Sambo Hall in February, they only ran the Art Center in Kobe. January 18th, they did 403. January 19th, they did 462. The claimed attendance for this show, 756. And I spoke to somebody who was there who noted that there were noticeably more rows of chairs than usual. So we can chalk this up to a success. You know, again, this is a building. This is their most loyal fan base. This is their home market. And it feels like a lot of the time, even when Sambo Hall shows are humming along a little bit more than normal, we've talked about, you know, how there's been a dramatic increase in quality in this building over the last 5 years or so compared to the 17, 18, 19 dreg shows that we were forced to sit through. But it does still feel like they're getting the leftovers and the scraps a lot of the time. And you've got the Battle Royal and things like that. And it's just very nice when something happens in this building. I you know, look, would Shun and Homari versus Kame and Rita, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, would that match have more of an impact if it happened in Corkin? Yeah, of course it would. But also, as somebody that watches all these shows, it's nice when something happens in this building. This is going to go down as a pretty memorable Kobe Sambo Hall show.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is with how they booked it. So Shun and Homari are your 2025 Rey de Parejas champions. They have to go through three teams to be crowned it on this night. They had the determination match as match one against KZ and Strong Machine J. Then you had their semifinal match against Jackie and Rita. And then later the finals, Minoli versus Shun and Homari. Throughout the show, it just felt like an underpinning of how the shows were, how the matches were kind of building on each other. And then when you look at it, it's like, oh shit, there was essentially 45 minutes of the show was Shun and Homari matches on it. You kind of look around at the same time and you go, all right, what did they try to accomplish? And I feel like your big takeaway with this is we've seen, at least for the first half year of Homari's career, that he has been slotted into a different kind of rookie position that we have not really seen in many years, if not ever, when that he immediately joined Zebrats and was working kind of as a super rookie. But he was having very like distinctive matches for 6 months, and then across the show, ending with him being the one scoring the win, getting the pin on Kota Minoura after a 450 splash, what you got to see kind of was him across the entire show, across these three matches and this 45 minutes of ring time, kind of shed that rookie role and now become a person in of himself. I feel like it was really impressive how they've kind of pulled this off. And now I feel like in a lot of ways today was like the second, or rather the 30th was like the second debut of Homari in a lot of ways.
Well, I've talked about it at length, you know, the way that they've sort of given him training wheels. You know, I loved the fact that as soon as he turned, he was on the road, he was working main events, he was working the traditional tour schedule that a Shun or a Hyo or a Ben would work. You know, he's never really had any time off. He's never worked a spotty schedule like we still see with somebody like Rio Fuda. You know, he was on the road, but we saw in the matches that would make tape, you know, with him, it was a lot of eye gouging and back rakes and spamming the super kick. And it was all these things that were entertaining, but he was very confined to a certain thing. I'm not going to use the term stooging, because as I read certain wrestling reviewers, I'm learning that stooging has become the most overused and overrated phrase in all of wrestling. We can pump the brakes on Kyle Fletcher stooging just a little bit. I love the guy, but good Lord.
Yeah. And that wasn't like stooging. That was just like showing ass. Like, why are we trying to call it stooging now when all that was like a heel appeal, really, that we've seen variations of, at least like dating to like Magnum Tokyo stuff.
That's too much. But anyways, you know, it's just so funny. We've seen Homari. I think the phrase I used at one point was he's bowling with the bumpers up. You know, they're preventing him from throwing any gutter balls because they've got him doing these very specific things. even in these high profile spots where maybe Shun is flying around and Ishin is doing his thing, you know, or just overwhelming the match with charisma, and whether you put in Gold Class or Vibes or Paradox or D-Courage, Homare has still just been confined to a certain role in these matches. And as time has gone on, Akihiro Sahara, his classmate, has been given a chance to sort of let loose. And we've seen Sahara stumble and fall, but also Sahara being that untamed, if you will, has led to a ton of exciting Sahara matches. And I think you and I, you know, coming into the podcast last week, we were prepared to talk about Rey de Parejas takeaways. We ran out of time. We're going to push it to this week. But I think you and I both would have gone like, oh, man, you know, Akihiro Sahara putting in great work, really outshining Homare, and then you go to Kobe and it's like, oh, that's why he got the push he got. That's why Homare's in the position he is, because they turned it on in one night. And I mean, good God, this has to go down as one of the most epic one-night performances in Dragon Gate history. This was unbelievable. You know, just seeing the evolution of comfort throughout the night, where, again, you know, the first match against Natural Vibes, it's not like he's doing anything out of the ordinary. And then you see him take a step up in the Gold Class match, where not only is that match one of the best tag team matches of 2025 and one of the best Dragon Gate matches I've seen this year, but Homari's a big reason why. And then you go into the main event and it's like, oh, this guy's just a main eventer now? He's just working with this confidence that I cannot believe, this confidence that he did not have wrestling Shingo Takagi a week prior. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and there's a couple things I want to touch on talking about Homare here. So just so people get a sake of like how different his schedule has been from other people. So Homare, as of today, has had 71 matches since he debuted on the 5th of September. So 71 matches he's had. Let's compare that to Daiki Yanagiuchi. Daiki Yanagiuchi, again, has a couple of years on him, has only had 139 matches.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's two full years now.
Right. Yeah. And then, yes, this person has been particularly snake butt, but we're going to use him as well. Rhea Fuda has had 186 matches. So not completely like blowing them away, at least as it relates to match time. Like when you like look at it, like he's been getting so much consistent work. And I feel like up until Sunday, there was one thing that I feel like people, when they were like watching Homare, have like the stick and move super kick and corner cutter, and that's really what you expect out of the offense. They were still having him basically bump in as anyone else would with on the Dragon Gate roster. And I feel like the thing that you really kind of got to appreciate, at least now, like after the tournament win, but he had like a maybe not Kurt Angle and Yuen Akiyama Shingo Takagi, but for like his first year, like he is someone who I think is one of the better like overall bumpers in the business this year. I think that you watch how he like, even this was the case in SSW Quest 4, you watch maybe not his offense, but if you watch like his footwork and how he's receiving stuff, it is like light years away from like people from like Rhea Fuda. Like Rhea Fuda, who had moments where he was like stumbling around on this card, has 2 full years more ring experience of a guy that I'll tell you, I thought that like I get more and more impressed like watching him like not just do like see the offense progress, but I think that his selling has been really kind of special as well.
I think the question with Homare, and it's one that we can't answer just yet, but it's something to come back to in September when we hit the first year anniversary for him, is not if he's one of the best in-ring rookies of all time. You know, Jun Akiyama's still going to get that nod. Kurt Angle's still going to get that nod. As weird as it sounds, Matt Riddle is in that conversation. And I still think Takuma Fujiwara is, you know, the 9 months that he was in Dragon Gate was, not even, I think the 7 months that he was in Dragon Gate were utterly electric. And I haven't seen Homare, just from a raw in-ring standpoint, hit that mark yet. The thing that we're going to have to ask ourselves, and again, there's 5 months at play here that we need to see how they unfold, is Homare going to end up being, outside of Shinsuke Nakamura, the hardest push rookie in the history of Japanese wrestling. I mean, you would have to be talking about what Shinsuke and Jumbo and
of the MMA bumps like Ironhead.
Yeah, I guess those do count. So you're at least talking about him in that conversation, because one of the things that I thought was interesting, because I think Homari is actually about to run into a pretty big accolade here coming up that we'll talk about when we get to it. But you know, one of the things that I started thinking about with the Dragon Gate tag leagues, because every company handles their tag league differently, and some put a lot of value into it, some don't. I think Dragon Gate has, you know, as prestigious of a Japanese tag league as anybody does. But if you go back through the history of Summer Adventure Tag League into modern day Rey de Parejas, you know, you look at the winners in order. It's Yoshino and Doi, Shingo and Yamato, Yoshino and Doi again, Hulk and Tozawa. You had the Trios League in 2012, which was Tozawa, Hulk, and Naoki Tanizaki. 2013 was T-Hawk and Eita. 2014, Kagetora and Susumu. 2015, Kness and Susumu. And then 2016, Dragon Kid and Eita, before going to present day, where 2023 was Kakuta and Yoshioka. 2024 was Doi and Dragon Kid. And then this year, Homari and Shun. Homari is the outlier in this conversation, outside of maybe T-Hawk and Eita in 2013, because they were so young, and that was a tournament used to boost them into a hypothetical upper mid-card / main event scene. But you go back through history, main eventers win these tournaments. I mean, 2023, it's Yoshioka, who had just lost the Dreamgate belt, and Kakuta, who was 2 months away from winning the Dreamgate belt. You know, this is the type of thing, as you go throughout history, it's not a tournament that necessarily makes guys. It's a tournament for guys that are made. And I find the handling of Homari in that context to be very, very interesting, because I do think, much in the same way that I've always applauded the fact that for the first 2.5 years of his career, Mochizuki Jr. has always had something to do. Really, we're living right now in the first time where it doesn't seem like Jr. has a built-in angle on every show. I think part of that is that has gone to Homari. And I don't think this is going to be an instance where he wins this tag league and then is back working openers. I actually think, and again, we'll talk about it here in just a little bit, I think this is only the beginning for Homari. I think he's going to be very, very busy in 2025, and I think he's going to be very busy working high-profile matches, to be specific.
Yeah, and I think, like, the remarkable thing, like, when watching him across this these three matches, and if you want to include SSW Quest 4, the way he's kind of grown into his body over the 6 months, and he really does have, like, a physical presence where maybe like he's not as like put together as much as some of the more strapping guys on the roster, but like you would see him, and basically the only person in the, across the three matches that was taller than him was SMJ. Mm-hmm. So he I think he's thinking that he's going to be moved up the top line and staying kind of there after like this ascension. I mean, I just point to what we would used to talk about and hear about Kento Kabune, that he would have at 18 months in, they would be thinking about putting the strap on him if he was 5 inches taller. Well, Homari is that.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly well said. I still think Kento had a charisma
that I haven't
seen from anybody. Again, you know, he's Japanese Adam Cole. You just imagine if he was a few inches taller, what his career would have been like. Also, Adam Cole much smarter than SB Kento. So that is certainly helped out Adam Cole as the years have gone on. In terms of the Homari Shun team, let's talk about these three matches in order, from the tiebreaker to the semifinal to the final, and then we'll look at the historical comparisons of what Homari did in this one night. But we start with this Natural Vibes match, which, again, this was the B block second place tiebreaker match, so the first of possible three matches for the evening for either of these teams. And Mike, I regret to inform you that Shun Skywalker and KZ have done it again. The weakest of the three matches they had, but by no means a weak match.
And you know what's the funny thing about that? The person that I have the note with Shun with is how much I always like Shun and Strong Machine J together.
Oh my God, absolutely.
They really crammed a lot of things into the 7-minute match. And it really, you kind of got a moment where it felt like Natural Vibes were, they did enough of a good job on Isolate the Rookie that they were going for these repeated machine killers, and they just were not able to kind of ever get one going. And in the last one, Homari ducks out of the way, gets a And then Shun steamrolls in and jackknifes Penn's SMJ to advance on Himari and Shun. And it just was a really fun worked 7-minute, just kind of all out sprint match, it felt like.
I love a Shun Skywalker jackknife Penn. That's always fun when he busts that out. The second thing, and I'll keep tabs on my star ratings here for these three Himari and Shun matches for the sake of illuminating this evening, I would go 3.5 stars on this match.
Yeah, it was 3.25, but I can see 3.5. Any other takeaways on that block decider?
It was, like you said, it was a great... I can't believe it was only 7 minutes. They did so much stuff that I thought it was longer.
Yeah, they really teased the isolate Himari thing enough that they were able to accomplish a lot of action and not a lot of ring time. That advanced on Shun and Himari to face the tentacle winners of the A block, Jackie and Rita representing gold class. And this one, we got the moonsault knee drop after a Himari super kick to get the win after a absolute face melter of a 15-minute match.
I don't think, and I'm double checking here, I don't think Rita got pulled off of any shows after the double knee moonsault, but he did go to the hospital afterwards. No, he got pulled off of Prime Zone.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I know you haven't, but I'm going to ask you it anyways. did you watch today's Prime Zone?
No, but I did see that before the holiday. Middle schoolers and junior high students could get into Prime Zone for free.
Opening match, Akihiro Sahara versus Yoshiki Kato. Give it a look.
Oh, no. I saw people talking about it today, but I was getting taxes done.
Oh, can I hit you with a second breaking news update here?
All right, what's your second breaking news update?
I've built it up too much. You're too excited. The July schedule is out.
Oh, I saw that on the Gayora blog.
July 3rd, Korakuen. July 6th, August. July 6th, Osaka. July 12th, Kobe. July 3rd, Kobe Art Center. July 13th, Kobe World. July 23rd. Shinjuku Face, and then July 27th Kobe Sambo Hall. So that's three Kobe shows in the span of a month. But I would put money on that being SSW Quest number 5.
Yeah, in the way that Dragon Gate schedule changes, I remember when it used to be a good 2 weeks off after Kobe Pro Wrestling Festivals, and instead
they get days off.
You got to keep on running. I mean, that's the realities of this kind of promotion. And yeah, no, you look at that and then, boy, they usually give Kobe a little bit of a break after Pro Wrestling Festival. But this year they're going to be back in Sanbo on 2 weeks later.
Yeah, I'm going to be super curious to see what they do in August and see, because normally they've been doing a double shot in the second half of the year. But
right,
that's a lot of I wonder if that Kobe Art Center, if that's just the ceremony or if they're going to do a show that day. I guess the draw is probably the pre-world ceremony more so than any other wrestling. I mean, that would be the lowest effort show they put on all year.
I mean, man, I'm looking at the time of the fan meet. The fan meet starts after Dragon Gate shows would be done. Yeah.
Yeah. It says here Gate players competing in Kobe World Memorial Hall tournament are scheduled to participate on that show. So,
well, it looks like, yeah, no, it's its own separate show because that has a 1600 start time and the fan festival starts at 1900 hours.
Okay, all right, there you go. So yeah, so that's a lot of Kobe in 1 month. It'll be interesting to see what that, the last one, the July 27th Sambo Hall show, it'll be interesting to see what that number does. I could see that being pretty low.
Yeah, no, that's going to be, it's going to be tight. Like, it's going to be tight for them to kind of pull that off there. But a real interesting story coming into kind of into this match where you had Jackie and Rita being just this tour of the force tag team that over like the last 5 months have really shot up the power rankings amongst the Dragon Gate regular tag teams, going up against like one of their biggest tormentors, Shun and Himari. And it is, at least for me, this is where you got to kind of see Himari start shedding that skin during this match a little bit more. So absolutely, like, off to the races. The overbomb crab was one of the more nasty things that I feel like Rita has taken to. Like, I wonder if he was a little, had his bell rung after that one as well.
I mean, look, the match, I get self-conscious. I feel like maybe I've been using this term too much lately, but this match was so incredibly physical. I mean, for four junior heavyweights, light heavyweights, middleweights, whatever, I mean, they beat the shit out of each other in this match, and Hamare is right there with them. And the thing with Kame and Rita is, you know, I there's no sense, I think, at this stage in either of their careers to do any sort of historical marking. All I know is that in real time, we're in the fifth year of Kame's career, and I'm finding there to be very fewer safer bets in wrestling than Jackie Kame in a big match. I mean, when does this guy disappoint? You know, we're now talking about times in his career, this being another one of them, where he's so good in this building that the discourse leaving this show is they need to run this back in Corkin. And unfortunately, given the storyline advancements that are happening, I don't know if they'll ever have a chance to do this match again in Corkin, but that's the level that Kame is competing at, is that every time he kills it on a small show, the discourse is, oh man, they should have done that in a bigger venue. You know, let this guy cook in a bigger venue. And I do wonder, with as conservative as this company's booking is, if not letting Kame just go wild more often than they do is of great hindrance to Dragon Gate's growth.
Now, I wonder about that. I think that for discourse sake, yeah, no, you run it in Tokyo because that's where the international audience kind of turns in for Dragon Gate every month, is whenever they have full production in Tokyo. Like, there is kind of like that. But I think that having like this kind of match in a building like this is so important that
I do too.
Like the propensity to run it back like the way it happened with Kame and SBK over the Brave Gate, I don't think we're kind of at that spot anymore. I think that we've seen over at least the last year how that they've tried to do special things for the market. And I would say that, at least for me, I feel like that you being like the company, like, need to keep things special for your hometown. I mean, we just talked about how much they're running in July in Kobe, but that's after, you know, a year where they had that fun East-West show to kick off the year. That's after having the Young Dragons Cup happen solely in Sanbo Hall. That's after having the finals of Rey de Parejas here. I think that keeping I know the desire, and of course, like, I think that maybe you have it at a building other than this, maybe you're able to get more crowd into, and the crowd was going nuts all through that. Like, that's not to discount that. I just think you want to keep something special for the local fans. And in that way, I'm kind of like, I really appreciate what they've kind of done in 2025 in Kobe. And I wonder, and that's, of course, just me just pontificating, I wonder if doing it at this match again in Cork and Hall just completely like loses some of the specialness of what they've been trying to do in Kobe this year.
Do you think, and obviously Big Hug is a glaring sort of cloud in the thing that I'm going to ask you, but historically, you know, we're at a point now, again, it's Kame's fifth year. He was a Triangle Gate champion for 13 days in 2022 with KZ and UT, a Twin Gate champion in 2022 for 51 days with Jason Lee, and that featured zero successful defenses, and then a Triangle Gate champion in 2023 with Shimizu and KZ, again, zero successful defenses. Let me look at this first reign. It was 13 days. This was when the Triangle Gate title was bouncing all around. So he's had zero successful defenses in the three title reigns that he's had, and obviously no Brave Gate runs to show for it. Do you feel like they've now missed an opportunity, maybe not in a Tyler Black Ring of Honor World Championship way, and the fact that it will never work, but do you feel like they've missed something by not capitalizing on, for lack of a better term, big match Kame more than they have?
Nah, I don't think so. I mean, personally, I think that Jackie has such a unique profile that, I mean, like, let's be completely blunt. He's going to get the young cutie pie kind of response from this fan base until that hairline starts to go. Mm-hmm. Like, he still looks just as young as he did when he debuted at age 20. So I feel like by like engendering fan support by him, like, constantly like kind of winning and chasing and winning and chasing, I think that kind of allows you to prolong that kind of window, because I just think that he kind of has a role that I don't think there is a big one for Jackie Kamei. I think that he will be someone that will always kind of be on the chase and be on the outside, and you need people like that. I mean, that's one of those things that I think really has helped out KZ, is the fact that, I mean, if KZ wins after the first title challenge, like, where's the chase? Where's the anticipation? I think with Kamei being so young as well, like, you're going to have so much of that why not keep on doing this until there is a time with, like, a Brave Gate where you give him the long Brave Gate run. I think he'll be fine.
Brave Gate champions since Kamei debuted, which is going to be going back to, we'll start in 2020. So Keisuke Okuda, Genki Horiguchi, Kagetora, SB Kento, the belt was then vacated and Kento won it again. Dragon Daya, Hyo, Minorita, Jason Lee, Ishin, KZ, Ishin, Hyo, Daya, and Yamato. I do wonder, and again, this is the tough thing. Maybe this is the Americanized way of thinking about this. I just wonder if the 229 days that Hyo spent as Brave Gate champion from December of 2023 to last July when he dropped the belt to Daya, I just wonder if everybody would have been better off with that being Kamei instead of Hyo.
I mean, I think that played out perfectly for Hyo, at least.
No, he couldn't be happier.
Right. I mean, we also have to consider the fact that, like, right before the Keisuke Okuda win, you had a year-long run of Kaito Ishida, mm-hmm. too. So you've seen a belt that has either hot potatoed or it has stayed on someone at least over the last, like, 6 years, essentially, for a long term. So do I think that Kamei would do that? Like, I feel like we need to go back and, like, listen to some of our shows last April when we were thinking that Kamei could be going for the Dream Gate at that time.
I don't think we were wrong in the moment.
No, I don't think we were wrong at the moment. I just think that you had someone who was, I mean, most popular guy in the company up until essentially the end of Big Hug. But you're riding that wave. And I don't know if pulling that and putting it on Kamei when Hyo had his own thing wouldn't have helped out things.
So last February, the Rey de Parejas kickoff show, or I guess this was last March, was headlined by Monte and Hyo versus Kamei and Jason. And I believe Kamei pinned Monte in that match, and Monte was already Dream Gate champion. And then you come out of Dead or Alive, you're not doing King of Gate in May. Would you have scoffed then at the idea of the May Corkin show being headlined by Kamei versus Monte for the Dream Gate belt?
No, I think that you, at that time, you probably would have had an opportunity to do that. Yeah.
And not for him to win, because Monte to bend to Yamato was absolutely the right move. And mm-hmm. I don't, you know, neither of us ever advocated for him to win the title. But that's kind of what I'm saying, is we're talking about a guy who we felt strong enough to headline as a singles competitor in Korakuen. And they didn't do that. And they didn't really do anything. Now, you raise an interesting point there, and I want to explore this just a little bit, and then we'll go back to the match, which was outstanding. But one of the things that has impressed me most about, and again, Big Hug is this weird 6-month detour in this whole thing. One of the things that has impressed me most about Kame's continued popularity and his continued in-ring greatness is the fact that while Homare has Sahara, and while Hulk had Shingo, and while Yamato has KZ, you know, Kame's generational rival was SB Kento, and Kento's been gone 3 years now, which is insane to think about, but it'll be 3 years here in July. You bring up the point of what's his end goal? What is the pinnacle of the Kamei story? What is that now? That's such a good point, because we saw him pin Shun Skywalker at World 2022 in that Twin Gate match, which is one of the best tag matches we've ever seen, one of the best matches in company history. But what else is there? Is it just pinning Shun again in a Twin Gate match? Is it a mythical Brave Gate win without a very specific rival? You know, it's not like Kamei and Hyo have ignited this huge feud. It's not like Kamei and Daya have deep-seated hatred with one another. all the Bravegate matches he's been in have just been, you know, Bravegate matches. And maybe Jason is the guy, but Jason is also weighed out of the Bravegate division, so you can't even get a significant victory there. What is it with him?
I think that you kind of hope that maybe down the line heel turns will help create that rival. I think because the situation when you listed out Daya is just like they've always been on the same side of the ledger, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that for like that, like it's like such a shame because the way that they always kind of treated Kamei and Kabune, and I still remember really specifically like the promo that Kabune cut on Kamei was like the perfect table dressing for that kind of feud with Kabune saying,
it wrote itself. Sorry to cut you off, but I was just, it was perfect.
Yeah, Kabune saying, hey, remember when we were in the dojo and we shared a bunk bed and I had the top bunk? Well, you're always going to be looking up at me. And I thought that was like one of the most cold-blooded things said non-Hisashi Shinma related.
but that's, yeah. It's, you know, it's what's depressing about his career, and it's also what's so impressive is that he's been able to do what he's been able to do without SB Kento around. And, you know, if Sahara has some freak accident that happens tomorrow, or Homari decides that, you know, he's so good looking, he's going to become a male model and ditch this wrestling thing, it's going to drastically alter the course of the other guy's career. And I'm just not sure everybody could respond in the way that Kame has. And the more time goes on and the more we see him in big matches like this, I've been really fixated on just how conservative the booking is. And historically, it always has been. The very first days of tournament, it's always been an incredibly conservative and slow book company. But I look at some of these Noah Corkins and I look at some of these DDT Corkins, and credit to Noah, you know, you got to hand it to Isis every once in a while. You got to hand it to Noah. They're doing great business in Tokyo. Do I think it's sustainable? No, I do not. But they're doing great business in Tokyo. And then I look at some of these Corkin cards and it's like, man, maybe Kame should be pushed harder. Maybe Rita should be in bigger spots. Maybe they should find more sustainable stuff for Ben to do throughout the calendar year. But Kame is kind of in that three-headed dragon of guys that I'm just not sure they're making the most of.
Yeah, and I think like this is going to be my one bizarre call that we'll see in 4 years if I'm right about this. You know who I think could end up being the generational rival, which is a shame because I think actually the person he has best chemistry with is Shun Skywalker. But the person that I think and it's going to be difficult just because of how they kind of are portrayed. I'm really intrigued by like what would be the theoretical Mochizuki Jr. versus Jackie Kamei blood rivalry would be.
I'm ready for it.
And that would give something for Jr. to do. And, you know, with how strongly they presented Junior in Tokyo in the first few years of his career, I think that could be very much a thing to capitalize on, or maybe look at Junior and Ishin again, you know?
No, I mean, that's not, look, the Junior Ishin Strong Machine J story is far from over. That's going to continue for a long time. You're absolutely right that the greatest attribute Kame has is this perpetual underdog nature. It's a story that writes itself. It's real life as much as it is anything else. The problem is that every once in a while you got to see the underdog win, and I'm not sure the underdog's winning enough. I mean, Kame could come out to the ring like 2007 Kurt Angle draped in every title the company has, and I still think we'd go, as long as he's a babyface, I still think we'd go, oh, that underdog, man, that guy just tries and tries and tries. And it's like, all right, well, at some point, let's see something else. You know, maybe let's see a title win and a successful defense for this guy.
Yeah, and that maybe that is that mythical Bravegate run that I think is kind of his mountaintop. But yeah, and it's a shame that like you're not able to run Jack versus Shun Skywalker nonstop, because I really do think that Shun has great chemistry with KZ. We've seen that countless times. He does great work with Ben. I think his best partner is actually Jackie Kamei.
100%. Like, I might put Rita second now.
Right. I mean, in some of the offense that we got to see out of Jackie and Rita in this, the Asai moonsault into the lung blower across the knees was just look like out of nowhere. It's like, oh God, y'all are doing this? Okay, perfect. That's the kind of stuff I want to see these two guys do. And just how insane I feel like we're not going to really touch on this at all here because it happened a week before. But when the Tottori show went up, the insane tornado dive that Rita does in that match where he just completely like lays flat afterwards is absolutely wild. This team is just incredible, Jackie and Rita, and it bigger things were at stake this night, and it was not about crowning Jackie, Kamei, and Rita the undisputed top tag team in Dragon Gate. It was, let's get Himari to the next level night.
I'll say this because I can't dig through the last 4 years of spreadsheets and find matches that feature Skywalker and Kamei. But you go to Skywalker's match guide in the top rated matches, you know, obviously Diamante and Shun versus Kamei and Jason from World 2022. You've got the four-way tag from last year's World high up there. You've got the cage match from last year high up there. You've got the three-way tag from 2022 that was the rights to Kamei, which was Benkei, Kagetora, and Yamato, Shimizu, Kamei, and KZ, and Hulk, Hyo, and Shun. That was actually, those were rights to Jason Lee, I think. That match was absolutely incredible. I think super underrated. You just go down his match guide, and his best matches consistently against Jackie Kamei. They have the best chemistry in the company right now.
Yeah, and it's just kind of a shame that this is like the best place for them to display it is always like in tag matches.
Yeah, it does. It does feel like, and again, this kind of goes to the conservative nature of this booking. You know, these are two guys that historically have not crushed it in King of Gate, but you would think at some point Kamei and Shun in a singles match in Cork and Hall would be the way to go, and maybe it's a King of Gate match. Maybe it's a match that headlines a King of Gate show this year. I don't know, but yeah, no, it's really tough with Kamei's size. You know, this is sort of the roadblock that he has where I don't know if you're gonna just attach him to Shun. I don't know what that next step is for those guys. I mean, look, I could watch them have tags and trios until the end of time. I would never get bored by it. But the wrestling fan brain does work in a way where you would want something more, and I don't know what that something more is.
Yeah, no, that's kind of the difficult thing about that combination. I was 4.5 stars on this.
As was I. Easily. It was my number two match in Dragon Gate this year behind Yamato versus KZ.
Yeah, and it's easily by itself makes this, I think, the best non-Tokyo show that they've had all year, basically.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Or big show.
Oh,
like,
no,
like
absolutely.
Small show, basically.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
And then we got to the finals. It was the all-heel affair, Minho Lee versus Shun and Himari. Jason Lee and Kota Minoura dealt with Animal Japan the way that you expect they would. I did appreciate the fact that they jumped them during the second entrance. I do feel like that was a little bit of a ha-ha for the last month of our lives being dominated by those two. But you had Minho Lee versus Shun and Himari. Interestingly enough, the three sane members of Z-Brats, basically, you had one of them in, you had Ishin in Minho Lee's corner, you had Kato and Shun and Himari's corner, but then you had Kai in the neutral corner, so they weren't really playing that into this. And instead, what you had was a 21-minute epic Dragon Gate tag team match where you got to see this new ascended level of Himari, and you also get to hear how Himari, without a doubt, is the most popular guy in Kobe right now. But interestingly enough, like by the end of the match, even Kota Minoura was getting a lot of strong crowd calls. The story of it really was that there was a moment where it looked like that they were able to put away Himari, but they fought their way out of it. A Shun Skywalker moonsault, which what felt like one of the last times that's happened, has to be years now. The moonsault knees, which has been Shun's finish in the tournament, did not work. The teasing for the SSW kept on happening until you had the moonsault knees near fall, and they immediately followed that up with a Himari firebird splash onto Kota Minoura for a huge pop, like a just one of those pops in Dragon Gate that when you hear three and the crowd explodes, you knew that you accomplished something kind of special there. And your 2025 Rey de Parejas winners are Shun Skywalker and Himari.
This match was a better version of the match that kicked off the tournament for Minoru and Lee when they did Minoru and Lee versus Ishin and Kato in Osaka.
Right,
and
yeah.
It became this very dramatic match that kind of half of it was built around the possibility of a double countout. And this match also spilled to the floor quite a bit. And it's a very interesting match structure. And it's one that I don't know why I get sucked into as much as I do. And now, again, look, I never feel good when I say this, but I do think Shun Skywalker is an above average level crowd brawler. I actually think he might be the guy that is the most entertaining on the floor outside of Brian Danielson and all of wrestling. And with Danielson on the sidelines, it becomes Shun Skywalker by default. But it was a match that, you know, whereas the opening match, I was surprised to hear was only 7 minutes because they did so much stuff. You know, this was a match that felt long, but that's a good thing because it felt dramatic. And by the time we had gotten to the finishing stretch, it felt like we were there. You know, it sort of bucked the trend that we always talk about, more so with Brave Gate matches than anything. But in this era of Dragon Gate, you know, there's a lot of 11-minute matches that could be 16-minute matches. And by the time this was done, it was so immensely satisfying because it felt like they got everything out of their system that they were trying to do. The Himare 450 came out of nowhere. I didn't know he had that in him. That was fantastic. This is a 4-star match to me, and what an epic way to end this tournament.
Yeah, you talked about match structure and the way that you very clearly had for the first 5 minutes, it was Himare kind of getting his ass kicked.
Mm-hmm.
And you had that built around the first crowd brawl where it was Minoru Lee very confidently going like, all right, we're at the point that we've been very underhanded with how we've been winning across the tournament. I mean, their semifinal was a low blow roll up to advance onwards. So you had that first crowd brawl, but then you had Himare kind of get an offense as they got back into the ring. And then Shun and Himare did an even more brutal crowd brawl where Himare was stacking chairs and slamming it like he was Shun being mini Skywalker, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was like kind of a very interesting way to kind of book it with that. And you have the teams, I feel like, really put forth kind of a performance where it felt like whenever you needed Himare to have that big, either in the way here, it's a babyface comeback, but whenever it was like the right moment for Himare to like make the hot tag into Shun, and then with that, it always felt like it was like right at the right time for it. And it just, I ended up being 4.25 on it. I thought it was a profoundly enjoyable match. I think across the night, I feel like it's one of the more interesting bit of bookings that they've really done in a while, because now we come out of Rey de Parejas where we entered it where it was Shun and, you know, his rookie that adores him, Himare, and you had a very clear kind of positioning of Zebrats with Shun Skywalker on top and Himare at the bottom. Things are changing really quick with them, and now I don't know where exactly you slot Himare in on the unit, because one can argue that maybe he is the number two after pinning Minoru.
Well, I think we're not going to have to worry about it. So the Zebrats factor in all of this is that, you know, there's obviously been a ton of infighting between Minoru and Lee and Shun and Himare, which is why I saw this match with my I don't know, what, crystal ball, is that that's the phrase, that's what I'm looking for.
Your third eye, yeah.
Your third eye, thank you, shout out Matt Seidel, third eye, you know. But I saw this match happening because they need to have some sort of blow off with this. After the match, you know, they bicker back and forth, and I'm trying to find the exact tweets on Jay's Blue Sky account here, but okay, yeah. So
Shun basically says, we're good here now.
Yeah. So we've talked at length about this. I've expressed my fears numerous times. I don't see any way coming out of this match that we are not headed for a Shun Skywalker babyface turn, Himare likely coming with him, and a total restructure of the heel unit, the one that I fear is going to be led by Coach Minoru. But then we also have the decourage side of this, where there's constant infighting there. Dia Inferno has reared his head once again, which has led to distrust between Kakuta and Yoshioka in particular. And it feels like that is obviously going to weave its way into the Zebrat story.
Mm-hmm.
To the caveman, to the cage match, most likely.
I mean, look,
we're in the season.
We're in the season, and they're playing Mariah Carey. You know, they're making it very obvious that we are heading towards a cage match. They are doing the beats that you would
expect.
Because
they've got to do a cage match and Dolphins one last time, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, they've got to do a cage match, and I would imagine that there'll be a Nagoya send-off here. But we'll talk about that in just a second. But the cage, I'm just not seeing a scenario in which Shun Skywalker leaves dead or alive as a heel. Now, they can't do it before, because I do think the fact that we already have the lineups for WrestleMania weekend and both of their own shows are built around Zebrat's trios matches, Shun's not turning face in April at that Corkin show. He's going to be a heel for another month, but I am just not seeing a scenario in which we leave Dolphins for the last time and Shun Skywalker is the heel leader unit, and that unit is Zebrats.
Yeah, and I think that kind of plays into a situation where I think Kakuta is going to lose his hair, basically. Okay. Like, you've seen how, like, wild his hair has gotten. Mm-hmm. Like, I know we thought it was Ishin for a while. I'm starting to lean towards Kakuta. Like, it was kind of noticeable with it. But, yeah, it's very clear what story they're weaving. Like, I think at this time we can guess that Shun, Kota Minoura, probably, I don't know who the third is for Zebrats, and then the big three in D Courage are going to be the cage match. Like, I think
that's
pretty clear.
I was talking to somebody about this earlier today. What do you think about Dia Inferno being in the cage?
I think if you have Dia Inferno in the cage, you're tipping your hand about at this point, I don't think we're seeing a Yoshioka heel turn coming out of this, unless it's Yoshioka turning heel and throwing down the Dia Inferno thing and standing with Kota Minoura, basically.
And that's the tricky part here. You know, this is, I always say, you know, we're trying to connect dots A and B, and Dragon Gate is going with option three. You know, they're on a totally different plane of thinking than we are. It's one of those where it feels too obvious. You know, if we know the beats of Dragon Gate booking the way that we think we do, it feels too obvious to have Yoshioka turn heel here. But I'm struggling to figure out what they're going to do with this mask. I guess the thing to throw out right away
I mean, I still think that we could be living in a reality that Kota Minoura has a mental break and puts on the mask, and then we have a lot of problems solved right there.
Was the problem solved by shipping him to the UK for 6 months?
Oh, I was just going to put him under a heavy rubber mask where we don't have to see him, his lack of emotions.
One that restricts his movements almost entirely.
I'll force him to learn things.
Yeah, no, it'd be
good for his character.
You know, his moral character too, toughen up a little bit. Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do here. I will say, just sort of package all this D-Courage stuff and the Zebrat stuff together, because this feels like the time to talk about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Let's do it.
The interactions, I was talking to somebody about this earlier today, the interactions between Kakuta and Yoshioka have been so entertaining and so heated that all it really does for me is illuminate how bad the build to their Dreamgate match at World 2023 was. You know, I said this in real time where it was like, okay, it makes sense they're doing Kakuta versus Yoshioka, even though they're in the same unit. That's a cool match to do. It's second from the top with the cage match. All right, I'm on board. And then they went into the coldest build possible, where it was dull babyface versus dull babyface. And I don't think Kakuta's image in particular has ever quite recovered from that match and the build to it specifically. And then you see it here, where these guys are throttling each other and they have to be pulled apart by Tanaka and Dia. And I think you could have done that leading up to World, and then just at the end of the match, they shake hands, they move on, we all forget about it. But the build to the hypothetical cage match that's going to happen here in May has been so good that it has made me retroactively mad about 2023.
Yeah, and especially like the way that Kakuta, rightfully, he's had Dia Inferno cost him matches that he had really had no reason to lose, like right as he was about to win them. And it boils over into how Kakuta is frustrated with giving up his spot for Rey de Parejas to Yoshioka, and then Yoshioka not winning Rey de Parejas, and on top of that, now Yoshioka's heel identity is running around fucking up his matches, and Yoshioka has the temerity to be like, no, it's not me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so like, it's easily understood, I feel like, the frustrations there. And really, the way that they did that prolonged brawl between him and Daya, I thought it was really, it's different for Dragon Gate, because whenever they would have brawls like that, usually you don't have the AEW aspect of, okay, eventually we're going to throw down all of the security guards and then we're going to go right at each other again. That's something that doesn't happen in this company. So the crowd reaction to that happening, I thought, was providing extra spice to it as well.
Two-part question. Do you think the at-large story here ends with Kakuta turning heel at Dead or Alive on Skywalker, which now puts it at, you know, 2021, Kakuta injures his shoulder. 2023, he gets the revenge Dreamgate title match and he wins. 2025, now they do the double turn at the event where they've been tied to each other's hips the last few years.
You know, I didn't think about those exact specifics, but that does offer a level of symmetry that they like.
Yeah, it seems on brand for them. Second question, which scares you more, a heel unit led by Coach Minoru or a heel unit led by Madoka Kakuta in 2025?
Easily Kota Minoru.
Okay.
Easily. Right. I think Kakuta, like the one like shame thing about the hip hop phase was that you only really saw him for essentially 5 months as it, and he kind of got his out of nowhere Dreamgate shot, and that was it for him as a heel. So even though it's kind of known that he's an all right promo, like he's not amazing or anything like that, I feel a lot more comfortable with him being that. But I do think that does kind of feel like that Kakuta, you have the symmetry, but I think Yoshioka is the person you need over there if you're going to do this big, basically in two units, create a new heel unit and then have like this open question about a babyface army and a certain kind of thing, because then you get to do the whole like, can Daya ever trust Shun Skywalker ever again kind of thing. Like, yeah, you have a lot to do that. And I feel like that might be more kind of appealing than just going, okay, we're subbing out, we're subbing in Kakuta, we're subbing out Skywalker and Himare.
Okay, so your order of confidence would be Yoshioka, Kakuta, Minoru as the heel unit leader.
That's, I mean, likelihood, I think it's going to be Minoru, but what would be the best avenue for success would be Yoshioka, then Kakuta, then Minoru, and then with Yoshioka being the top choice, having that and then allowing him to try to draw something out of Minoru as a number two.
I'm going to keep firing questions at you. It's too soon for Kato, right?
Oh, way too soon. Way too soon. And I don't think he's someone that I think is going to end up like KZ or Hio and just end up being a heel for several years before we even do this. Like, let's be honest. I don't think you really want to turn Yoshiki Kato babyface before 2027.
No, not the way he's wrestling right now. I want him to do the exact thing he's been doing. Is it too soon for Ishin?
I just think that you have so much, like, you've really come into a relevation with him as a heel that
it's like a 2A and not a 1A.
I just think it's going to be hard for him to be a 1A.
Yeah, I do too.
Him being the number two to Yoshioka, Kakuta, and Minoru, I think that that's actually an elevation for him because he's not the number two by any stretch of the means in Z-Brats right now. I'd probably rank him around four, according to how you feel about Kai on any given day.
Yeah, I would put it at Shun, Minoru, Ishin right now.
I sometimes I feel like Jason's higher than Ishin, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I mean, Jason's respected more because he's been around for forever, and also just because you know, mm-hmm. what are you gonna do? Not put Jason Lee? That'd be very bad for business. Okay, final question in this realm. Should we at least anticipate the possibility of Himare being the one who kicks Shun out of the unit?
That was the lingering thought in the back of my mind.
Which I would say if they did, it would be the single boldest move in the history of the company.
Yeah, because this is a guy that it's not just Kobe, but with us getting able to see them at the outposts on YouTube and the other stuff that was recorded and posted on the network, he gets as many crowd calls as Daya does at times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems to me like you had him turn heel so you could turn him babyface. And it just seems like that's the thing about him being the betrayer, but I still can't shake the thought that it could be him.
No, it's strange because I would want to keep him and Shun
at the hip for a while.
I would want to keep them together for as long as I can because it fits true to the initial Homari turn. The problem is that if you're going to turn both of them babyface, you will lose, for the time being, the connected thread between Homari and Sahara. Now,
yeah.
Now it's more important that Shun is a main event babyface than your undercard rookie feud that you and I happen to particularly care about. But it is something that you have to consider, that once Homari turns face, even if it's, you know, even if there's shades of gray in this company, you know, when two babyface units wrestle each other, you're losing the thing that is there between Homari and Sahara right now.
Yeah, and I don't feel like with what all happened with Kato and the kind of stuff coming out of Young Dragon's Cup, I don't think you want to lose that right now. I feel like that provides enough, because I think you're losing something not just for them to have that tissue, but I think just as much it makes things a little more difficult with Sahara and Daiki, you know?
Yeah. Is there anyone, because here, I mean, it's such an odd thing to anticipate this Die Inferno thing, because this feud is so secluded to D-Courage and Z-Brats. You know, Vibes is not involved, Gold Class not involved, Paradox not involved. If we're going to see a change in heel unit leadership this summer, it feels like it either, you know, it either stays as Shun or it changes to Minoru Kakuta or Yoshioka. And I'm struggling to think of another option. I guess the you know, the shot in the dark, the plus 10,000 odds is Homari, but I would only mention him and not seriously consider him. It's, you know, it's obviously not Tanaka. I don't think it's Daya. I think they have a good thing going with Daya. I wouldn't want them to change it. And I don't see how anybody from any other unit could get involved in this story right now.
Yeah, unless you have the proverbial rookie Weapon X sitting there that you want to do this and have them work as this, and you're probably going to adjust it, you know, just because of how restrictive the Daya Inferno mask and gear was. And originally, it feels like there's only a couple real strong suspects, you know?
And you're talking about somebody leading a heel unit as you head into your busy season. So it's either got to be a known guy or it's got to be Homari. And I don't think I would consider any other option. Now, Yoshioka feels like the safest bet. I think Kakuta's the most interesting.
But you've had, yeah, it'll be the most interesting thing that this has been a long plan that, like, he's had Homari come out to his matches as Daya Inferno to get the subterfuge going. Like, you have to basically be jumping a few hoops. But yeah, no, I feel like that would be an interesting way to go.
And I think as we get closer to it, I don't know if it matters. Well, let me put it this way. I think Shun versus Yamada was the world main event. And I think whoever's leading the heel unit gets the Dangerous Gate match. So what you're building towards that when you turn Shun face. And I think I feel pretty confident right now that Yamada versus Shun is locked in for that second weekend in July.
Yeah, and I feel like with where the company is at the gates, you kind of need to go to that point, you know?
Because I don't know. I mean, Yoshioka is always a possibility. I can't say no to Yoshioka. And, you know, it's fucking July, so Coach Minoru is going to be in play. You know what I mean? Like, you can't ignore it, but it feels like Yamato versus Shun is the logical direction there, especially given the main event of the first Korakuen of the year.
Yeah, no, I think that there's a level of symmetry there that you can't really discount. And I mean, I just like look at this overall situation, and there's one thing that I feel pretty certain about, and it kind of relates into the heel situation. It's pretty clear to me that I don't think we're going to have D-Courage to worry about at Kobe World.
Yeah, it does seem that way, you know. And I think that's for the best, because
it's run its course.
It's run, well, and you need heel and Monte to do something.
Yeah, and I feel like if you don't turn Yoshioka, you do have, like, okay, Hyo, Yoshioka, and Monte, you have something there.
Yes, and, you know, as I've never advocated breaking this unit up since they reformed, but you're talking about a natural vibes unit that's KZ, Strong Machine J, and UT, with Shimizu being the biggest question mark of all. And Flamita, for as much as I loved him in vibes, you know, Flamita could come back to insert unit here, mm-hmm. and it wouldn't really affect his performance. I would be considering doing a one fell swoop, seeing if you can get rid of D Courage in 1 month and maybe vibes in the next. And the same way in 2015 that the
millennials, you
lost millennials and Mad Blanky in the same month between Corkin and Dangerous Gate. And it would this is where this company can get really interesting. And it's dangerous to fantasy book here, but I think these are the real conversations that need to be had as we head into Dead or Alive at World. It would feel just wrong if Natural Vibes ended and it wasn't at the hands of Shun Skywalker, but also it feels like Shun Skywalker's going face. It does feel like Natural Vibes needs to end, though, and it does feel like D Courage has run its course. But I mean,
a new heel unit getting those two trophies right mm-hmm. off the bat, that gets them off to races.
It does, but this will sound melodramatic, but I think it's worth saying, we've lived with Shun Skywalker as the lead heel character for 3 years now. I'm having a hard time imagining a Dragon Gate without him as the top heel. And I'm not like, this was my whole point when it started to seem like maybe he was going to turn, where I was like, hold on, I don't think we're ready for this yet, because it feels like he has more stories to tell in this position, where I'm not sure I trust him to hand off the baton, whether it be to Yoshioka Kakuto or God-fearing Coach Minora. I'm not sure I trust them in that position in the same way that I trusted Shun. We'll have to see it for me to believe it, but we've just, even, you know, at the times where, you know, let's say Kento was in Mexico and Kato was hurt and you were just running those tired Shun, Kai, Hyo trios matches, we've never had to worry about the heel unit. We haven't had to worry about the heel unit in 3.5 years almost now.
I mean, like, if we want to bring it back even before that, like, RED was not in a weak spot when they changed over to Z-Brats.
No, by the end of that unit, a well-oiled machine.
Right. So, I mean, we're really talking maybe upwards of 4 years.
Were the last time that I was not confident in the heel unit was September of 2018, the month before Pac came back.
So we're coming up on 6.5 years, basically.
Because Pac leaves 19, and then Eita takes back over, and I'm trying to think just real quick. Like, okay, so
you only had like 6 months before COVID, man.
You only had six months before COVID, and then just with the way things were booked, like once Masquerade comes in, which is the end of 2020, RED is set. They're cool. Everything's fine. They have a unit that they have perfect chemistry with. And I mean, we talked about it, you know, week after week. They're just the consistency of the great RED versus Masquerade tags. And so, you know, while there might have been some bickering, for a lack of a better term, over should this be Eita's unit, should this be Ishida's unit, should this be Kento's unit, boy, is that a silly conversation with 4 years of hindsight. But we didn't have to worry about the overall performance. You know, again, it really goes back to once Pac showed up and steered the ship in the right direction, we've had a consistency that quite honestly is abnormal for the company to have this sustained greatness of heel units, you know, one after another after another. And when you do something like turn Shun face, which again, I do think I would just be hard pressed for that not to happen right now, you have to think about that seismic shift in the tone of the company, because it will be a drastic change if Shun is not your 1A heel going forward.
Right. Yeah. And your hope is that the overall character shift and him as this face run, when he's still, I mean, outside of the big baby faces, considered one of the more popular people in the company, that you're able to kind of pick up on that and you're able to provide that boost to the heel side as it gets kind of cemented. And I do feel like that it is a situation where you have a lot of people in that unit that there's going to be some other changes, I feel like, happening too, because Kai's probably going to be on the way out too, because he's now been a heel since 2020. So you're ready to do that.
Yeah, and he fits into Paradox, you know, no question. Or he can hang out unaffiliated for quite a while.
Right. Yeah. But it does feel like that you have like the heel unit, like it's 8 members. Like, remember like how much I made a big point about when they were up to 6 and 7 going like, hey guys, you know how much you're able to do like that. But when you come to this point, you're ready to start shedding. It's only
Shun and Kai that I think would have any chance of going. You know, I mean, Jason's only been a heel for a year. Minoru's been a heel for less than a year. I wouldn't touch Ishin. I wouldn't touch Kato.
And Johnny is not really reflective of the heel unit. He just slot in wherever.
And so then Homare is the big question, which, you know, I think I would keep him with Shun, but I could be swayed very easily also.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you might need to kind of do with like that kind of sweeping change to do that, just to rebuild that heel army. Like, it's, I mean, you also have to take a look at like, yeah, we're talking about Natural Vibes now kind of reaching that end point. Gold Class is always kind of an open question.
Yeah, but leave them alone.
Don't touch them. I mean, I'm with you, but I think that there is a reality that, I mean, this all shakes out the way that we're kind of just speculating. And then instantly, Gold Class is the oldest unit in the company. And that clock has never really rolled back, even though they escaped last year. You know?
Yeah, I mean, they are, but they aren't, because when you've got zero original members, and when you add somebody like Kame who makes them so fresh so immediately, it just feels like that unit has been in a perpetual state of restarting, which is not a bad thing. They've at times desperately needed to hit the restart button, but I feel like even from January, we're talking about a totally different unit.
Yeah, Kamei really did that.
Even in the tone of the presentation of it, it's way different than 2 summers ago when it was Ben and Rita and Minoru, and Ben had the over-the-top charisma. Like, we're talking about a totally different unit now, even if it's the same branding.
Right, yeah, like, now this is a unit where I'm like, okay, you could slot Sahara in there soon, and it makes sense. Like, he's an absolute boy. They're absolute boys now.
I did think about if Shun was going to turn, what they could do with him and Mochizuki Dojo as almost a penance of sorts. And I was very entertained by that idea. I don't know if they'd do that, but I like that a lot.
Shun might just be at like that level where you can't do that kind of thing.
I think you're right. You know, the thing that I always compliment him on is he can brawl with Punch Tamanaga on one show and Yuki Yoshioka on the next, and they feel equally important, where his value is never lowered. He only raises people. But I do think if you start spending time with Daiki and Fuda, then I think you run a real risk of making him not look like a superstar, and I wouldn't want to do that right now.
Right, yeah, but you know, the penance tour was not too big for Misaki Mochizuki in 2000, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, there's a lot to kind of go along with that there. Well, there's one other major thing we haven't talked about coming out of this Kobe Sambo Hall card case. The Brave Gates being unsealed out of nowhere.
That's right. I will take a delayed victory lap on this, as when Yamato made the announcement in December that he was going to put the Brave Gate belt on the shelf while he was Dreamgate champion, I said, I feel like there's a story going on here, and we'll have to wait until March to find out when they do what used to be Champion Gate in Osaka. I was a little bit early on that, but we have a Brave Gate match here at Korakuen Hall.
That's right. After the pre-intermission 8-man tag, Mochizuki Dojo versus Paradox, Yamato, BB Hulk, Susumu, Yokosuka, and Kagetora, Yamato won with a lion tamer on Akihiro Sahara. And the aftermath, Daiki grabbed the microphone. He insisted on starting the match against Yamato. And then afterwards, he basically begged for a title shot. Everyone kind of dismissed him, but he kept on asking. And then eventually, like, yeah, no, we'll do this because we do think that the gumption of someone who only has a count out victory doing a title challenge, that certainly is showing a level of bravery. So added onto the April 7th Cork win that will close out the show previewing, we have Yamato versus Daiki Yanagiuchi for the Open the Brave Gate title. Yamato makes his first defense.
Can I tell you exactly what's going to happen here? If you thought I was right about Rey de Parejas, just wait until this.
He's going to murder him, right?
No.
You think Daiki's going to flashban?
No. Double count out finish. The Brave Gate belt is vacated. And then you got to remember, they are running, speaking of Kobe Sambo Hall and the amount of dates there, they are running Kobe on April 19th when everybody, all the big stars are in America. So you do double count out here, you vacate the belt, and you do a one-night Bravegate championship tournament. Eight men, Kobe Sambo Hall. You could hypothetically, I don't have all these names for certain, but the names that I would put in the tournament, Homare, Daiki, Fuda, Kagetora, Ryoya Tanaka, Kame Rita, UT. Once again, Homare wrestles three times in Kobe Sambo Hall. You do Homare versus Daiki in the finals. Homare wins. Dead or Alive, the final show in Dolphins. Homare versus Dragon Kid for the Bravegate belt. And Homare wins.
You see, I was all with you until I saw something that Jay Blue Sky posted about.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel like I'm with you on they have to get this belt off of Yamato. And I do see the double count out vacation as a possibility. I mean, Dragon Kid, yes, I do think Dragon Kid will be facing off against someone for the Bravegate. I think it might be UT, though.
It's not. They don't. And look, I love the guy.
Jay got in my head, and after the UT Mochizuki Jr. Mike Spears offer match that we had earlier on the card, don't you want to see UT tie up Homare in a perfecto?
Mike, I want you to get used to the image of opening six-man tag match, Nagoya final send-off, UT on one side, Ultimo Dragon also from Nagoya on the other side. I love UT to death. He's not wrestling for the Bravegate belt at Dead or Alive this year. It's not happening.
Yeah, yeah. And
it's him and Ultimo in a six man and maybe Sanshiro Takagi, who is also from Nagoya. I was looking up wrestlers from Nagoya earlier, and it's not as deep as I thought. They're all Dragon Gate guys. It's Dragon Kid, it's UT, it's Ultimo Dragon, it's SP Kento, who's not walking through that door. And then it's like Sanshiro Takagi and Takashi Sagira.
I think someone else, I'm trying to make sure that I am not off on this. Okay, that's what I thought. I was about to say I thought maybe Magnum was, but no, he went Kawasaki mode.
That's right, he went Kawasaki mode. And and you can't invite Takashi Sagira to wrestle UT because UT is not strong enough to handle that.
Yeah, I mean, Homare barely survived that.
Yeah, exactly. So, I would be very into UT versus Dragon Kid, but I think there's a 0% chance of that happening.
Unless somehow I get ownership over Dragon Gate, that's not happening.
And you would do UT and Dragon Kid instead of Homare and Dragon Kid?
Yeah, because I want to make sure that the Nagoya fans go home happy because they got mad about not getting cage match 1 year. They're already going to be salty. I don't want to give them anything else, too.
Get used to match number 3, UT KZ and Strong Machine J versus Ultimo Dragon Don Fuji in Toru Owashi in your Nagoya send-off match.
That means Toru Owashi extends his career another like 3 weeks.
He's having too good of a time. He doesn't want to retire now.
Hey, I mean, who wouldn't want to be closing down Dolphins Arena with that? I mean, the person that you put fear in me when you like listed out the six man, I thought you were going to see Hio Del Santo. I was like, fuck, I thought we were going to get out of having to be involved with that retirement ceremony.
Ultimo just, he announced that he's working one of his shows in Mexico, but they had to lose their ass on that show. There's no way he's coming back.
There's no way in the world I would put him back in with my money. Like with that, but Ultimo does Ultimo things.
He actually, you got to remember, because he not only worked the world, but he actually worked a Nagoya conference hall show on that tour. It's actually the more fun match of the ones that he worked, where it's like, I got to pull this up now because it's one of my favorite random. It's like Santo, Ultimo, and Ho-Ho, I think, are the guys in the match. Hold on, let me find this.
Well, they should be honored to be teaming with Ho-Ho Luna. I mean, Ho-Ho got a win over Junior 2 recently.
That's right. This match is on YouTube. This match is really fun. Oh, no, it's not. It's not Ho-Ho. Did he team with Ho-Ho? He teamed with Ho-Ho and Korakuen. The Korakuen match was Daya, Yoshioka, Santo, Ho-Ho, and Ultimo against BB Hulk, Diamante, Hyo, Kai, and Shun. The Nagoya match is on YouTube, and this is the really fun one. This was Dragon Kid, Yamato, Santo, and Ultimo against Mochi, Mochi Jr., Susumu, and Kanda, so M3K. I liked that one a lot.
Yeah, I remember like Kondo was kicking ass in that match.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a really good one.
Yeah, but so Bravegate, it's coming back At least for this Corkin, both Case and I think that we're probably going to be seeing a new Bravegate champion, and Yamato's not going to be losing the belt to cause that happen.
No, they're vacating that belt there. I don't have any doubt there.
Well, was there anything else on this Rey de Parejas final show you wanted to touch on before we talk about Corkin?
No. Watch the Himare matches and... Well, you know what? I'll say this real quick. I am endlessly entertained by Gianni Valletta, and I just think they get it with him, and I'm kind of super annoyed that more people aren't paying attention to how fun his run is. And that 8-man semi-main event, which was D-Courage against Kai, Ishin, Kato, and Valletta, was only 5 minutes, and it was so effective at not only furthering the D-Courage storyline, but putting Valletta over like the monster that he is. And I don't know if you saw this, the day before Corkin, it is the Susumu Yokosuka homecoming show. And I don't know if this is going to end up on the network. I don't know if this is going to end up on YouTube. I get the feeling the answer is neither. But the main event of that show is Susumu and Valletta in a singles match. And I saw that and it just warmed my heart. I thought that is the perfect use of Valletta. House show homecoming main event singles match. It's probably going to turn into a DQ and then a multi-man, you know, Paradox is going to come out and they're going to do Paradox and ZBrash and an 8-man tag to close out the show. What a fun match that is. I really hope we get to see that.
Yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun with Johnny back. And to touch again on Kakuta just storming out, like already in the ring, warmed up, running the ropes before everyone else comes out from D-Courage. It was really good. Like, Kakuta has been like carrying the weight on this kind of Die Inferno thing, and it's been nice to see.
He's been great.
Let's talk about this Corkin in case before we actually get in deep into this preview. Interesting thing I just discovered. They have announced that for this Corkin Hall show that's on the 7th, we'll talk about it next week as we preview a WrestleMania weekend shows for Dragon Gate as well. They're announcing that they are lifting the ban on throwing paper tape to celebrate BB Hulk's 20th anniversary match. And if this goes well, they might look at for more anniversary and homecoming tournaments, bringing back paper streamers for Dragon Gate.
I think that's such a bygone thing now. Like, I mean, the first Ring of Honor shows that I attended, I remember thinking it was so cool that there were streamers there. And that's something that obviously has disappeared from Japan, which means it's largely disappeared from America. And that sucks. I like the streamers. I still think they're super cool. And I'm excited that they're going to allow them for the BB Hulk match here.
The thing that when we watch old footage that I really miss are the supporter banners that they would come out for big shows.
Well, Eita Nomala Star is the all-timer.
Well, no, I mean, those at Corkin Hall, Yamato Badass, that's another great one. But I'm talking about the supporter banners that only for big shows, the vertical ones that come out for the matches.
Oh, yeah, like Shingo used to always have those.
Yeah, Shingo and Tozawa would always have those. I always thought those were really cool.
The biggest obstacle with Dragon Gate is just the visual of this promotion. It was at one point the thing they did better than anybody else, and it was the thing that they are so far behind on now. And banners like that, you're so right, those make a difference.
Let's talk about the Gate of Passion coming to us from Corkin Hall on the 7th. We are opening with Paradox versus a veteran unaffiliated team, Dragon Kid, Naruki Doi, Kagetora, and Don Fuji. Dragon Kid making his Corkin return. He did have an appearance and a big pop at the Royal Sambo on the 30th. Match 2. This is a kind of a fun combination we have here. Strong Machine J, UT, and Luis Monte going against Mochizuki Dojo, Ryo Fuda, and Akihiro Sahara. 10-man tag. Benkei, Rita, Jackie Kamei, Mochizuki Jr., teaming with fellow class of 2016 member Hyo, going up against Z-Brats, Kai, Jason Lee, Ishin, Yoshiki Kato, and Himare. Match 4. Oh, I wouldn't have a Yuki Yoshioka versus Johnny Valletta singles match right before a Die Inferno appearance, but that's what's going to happen. We didn't mention this. Yoshioka got dragged to the back by Johnny. So, I mean...
With the chain, no less. It was a great visual. Again, the Valletta stuff is just... It's so good. And the people that would like it most are the people that are never going to watch it. It drives me nuts.
No, I hear you with that. But that's going to be... probably play into the main event later on in the show. the BB Hulk 20th anniversary special six man tag. We're getting a, it's going to have some heavy Hokkaido flavor and North Japan flavor, as BB Hulk will be teaming up with someone that we've become very familiar with in recent weeks, Jinsei Senzaki of Michinoku Pro Wrestling, along with Yoshitomo Shimo Higashi, who represents Ishibushi's Pro Wrestling Institute.
He's a Northeast guy, I assume.
Yeah, and he's only like wrestled like several times. I think that he is like related to the bar that BB Hulk was like affiliated with at one time.
Okay.
Yeah. Like the only time I've ever seen this guy is related to BB Hulk. But they'll be going up against Asumi Yokosuka, KZ, and returning, we have Katsuo representing Dokkan Ring.
Well, we can only hope that KZ plays the role of Terry Boy here and that Jinsei Senzaki turns back the clock 32 years.
Yeah, I want to see KZ take that over the top rope bump.
I would like to see Senzaki do that.
Try to do that. KZ's lighter than what Terry Boy was in 1992.
Maybe. KZ's very muscular. That's true.
He's dense. Slight but dense. Our semi-main event is that Open the Brave Gate Championship. Yamato making his first defense against the challenger Daiki Yanagiuchi. In our main event, we have Dragon Daya, Madoka Kakuta, and Ryoya Tanaka versus Shun Skywalker, Kota Minoura, and Daya Inferno.
So, I mean, this is impossible to predict. Obviously, Valletta and Yoshioka, even though it's three matches before, this is going to bleed into this main event. I would assume, once again, that Yoshioka gets dragged to the back and then makes some sort of babyface reemergence at the end of the main event. But this is one of those shows that is impossible to predict. We'll just have to let it play out and see what happens and then talk about it next week.
Yeah, no, it looks like it's going to be a real fun Corkin Hall show. And you know, the undercard matches, I know that sometimes we build them up and they don't necessarily end up that way. That match too looks like it could be a lot of fun.
I'm with you. No, I like this card a lot.
Yeah, it's going to be a great time. That will be on Monday the 7th, in case we'll be back next week to talk about that and previewing Dragon Gate USA Rebirth and the Gate of Revolution coming to us. It's almost Vegas time, man.
It is. Oh, trust me, it snuck up on me.
Hey, while I was doing taxes today, I was going like, oh yeah, no, I'm flying out on tax day. Yeah, that is true. Anything else you want to talk about, man, before we get out of here tonight?
I don't think so.
Hey, we ended up basically talking 15 minutes about RSNs and, an hour and a half of Dragon Gate.
There you go.
There you go. You could follow us on social media. We're at both Twitter, X the Everything app, as well as Blue Sky at Open Voice Gate. Case is _ in your case. I am at Fuji Heya. If you'd like to join in on the conversation, step into the Voices of Wrestling Discord. That's where we have a channel designated for Dragon Gate. It's the best place to talk about Dragon Gate. There are people who go to the shows in Japan that stop by, matches of the week. It's a real fun, active community as well. And probably more importantly for our purposes, Case, the Open the Voice Gate channel, where we do all of our show postings. That's usually where we have a running schedule going for when you can expect to get your next episode of those days. You will expect that right around when we have WrestleMania time there, but also we post our match listings, everything else there. That's on the Voices of Wrestling Discord and the Open the Voice Gate channel. But that's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back with you next week talking about the Gate of Passion 2025 Corkin show, as well as previewing the revival of Dragon Gate USA happening this WrestleMania weekend in Vegas. That's going to do it for us here. Have a good rest of your weekend, everyone. Take care.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.